The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Cam. Cleared. All systems go for the Patriots. Are they once again the team to beat in the AFC East? Plus, for only the third time ever, Tampa Tom versus Aaron. Who's got the edge Sunday? And just exactly what is at stake? And then, go crazy, why don't you, Los Angeles? After the Dodgers' historic night, we'll tell you why all the pressure now falls on by far their most famous player. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now. Greeny with you, live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Heineken. Jam-packed we are with all those stories and more, but we begin with the huge news from yesterday, college football and our top story. Alabama coach Nick Saban, as well as athletic director Greg Byrne, have tested positive for the coronavirus. Saban's status for this Saturday's game against Georgia is in doubt, but he is preparing for the game in any and every way he can.
This was routine every day. We test our players every day. I get tested every day. I feel fine. I felt fine. I was very surprised, you know, by this. Still doing everything possible to get ready for the Georgia game. I'll have normal meetings tomorrow. Everything will be on Zoom. You know, Sark's kind of filling in my absence for anything that needs coordinated in the office. But we're going to do everything we can to help our team, you know, get ready to play. And I'm not sure exactly how this is going to play out when the game comes, you know, whether I can have communication with people or not. We'll have to research and sort of figure that one out. But we did have a plan for each coach on the staff as to what might happen, and we just got to go from there.
Well, let's make 100% clear all the things he just said there. They're playing Georgia this weekend. It's the biggest game of the year. It's 2-3 in the country. Sark is Coach Steve Sarkisian, who it would appear Heather Dinich, Paul Finebaum, and David Pollack is going to be running the matter in Nick Saban's absence. Heather, you were on that Zoom call with Saban. What more can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you that if he's not watching your show right now, Greeny, he's breaking down film of the defense from practice yesterday. He reminded everyone he's feeling fine. He didn't leave the country. He's right down the street, and he's going to continue to help them prepare. But as you mentioned, Steve Sarkisian is going to be calling the plays on Saturday, and he's pretty much running the day-to-day from the football building while Saban weighs in from home. And if he's following CDC guidelines, which I imagine he will have to do that for 10 days.
So to make it 100% clear, and Nick, if you are watching, get well soon. But in the event that he is working on the game, to make it 100% clear, Heather, is there any chance he winds up on the sideline on Saturday?
No, not if he's following CDC guidelines, because, again, it requires, and the SEC requires, a 10-day isolation at home. Now, the other thing is that there is a rule in the NCAA football rules that was provided to ESPN.com yesterday from the SEC office saying that the coaches cannot have communication unless you are in the press box to the field. So by rule, Saban is not allowed to call in to the game on Saturday. He's not allowed to Zoom in on Saturday. And that rule goes into effect 90 minutes before the start of the game when the officials take control of the game until the end of the game when they blow the whistle and the score is final. So his communication is limited to practice this week, not in game.
And again, it's the biggest game of the year, 2-3 against their arch rival and his former assistant, Kirby Smart. Paul Finebaum, I come to you. No one talks to more people in the SEC and more people who care about the SEC than you do. What reaction were you hearing on your show yesterday?
Shock, Greeny. When the story broke about 5:45 Eastern time, everything in the South, and it really in college football, just came to a screeching halt. We've heard many coaches, 6 or 7 already get COVID, players by the bushel full. But when Nick Saban got it, it really sent a pall over the sport. And it's so interesting to see what is going to happen next. He said very clearly yesterday that he'll take another PCR test today and tomorrow. And you know, I don't know what happens if it turns out to be a false positive 2 days in a row. Heather was correct. CDC guidelines do prevail, but I've covered the SEC for nearly 40 years, and what coaches want to do down here trump anything else, including the CDC. I'm not suggesting Nick Saban's going to be at the game, although his family has a box, but this is the biggest game of the year, and crazier things have happened.
Okay, yeah, that was sort of what I was hinting at when I was asking that to the first place. So, David Pollack, let me come to you. Let's just assume that Nick Saban is not there. He is not physically present, and as Heather said, can't have practically any interaction with the team on game day. What impact do you think that has on this game against Georgia?
Well, Saban's not a caretaker. Like, he's not a guy that's just the rah-rah guy and doesn't have his hands in on everything. Everything runs through Nick. Like, everything. And talking to, like, I talked to a coach who was at Alabama. One of the things that was surprising, the coin toss is directed by him. Which way they're going to kick, warm-ups. Like, everything that goes on, injured players, everything goes through Nick Saban. So this will definitely be different. And I think just from a presence standpoint, how many times have we seen Nick chew guys out on the sidelines, chew coaches out on the sidelines and bring energy and not take certain things? And the guys are always, you're always looking over like, oh God, like dad's mad at me. Like I got to make sure I step up my game. So I think this is huge, man. There are some coaches that it wouldn't be as big of a deal. This is an enormous deal for Alabama and the Crimson Tide.
Quickly, Heather, someone asked me this question and it's a good one. Should Alabama lose this game in a close game? What consideration would the College Football Playoff Committee give to the fact that they played it without their head coach?
It would absolutely be considered, just like during a, quote, normal season, when they take into consideration star players that aren't on the roster. But you have to remember who comprises the selection committee, because their perspectives matter. Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland is on the committee, so he can bring the perspective of an administrator who currently has everything paused because of 21 positives at Florida. Then you have former players like Penn State's John Urschel and a coach like R.C. Slocum who could bring the perspective of what it's like to play and go through a game without a head coach. All of those perspectives at the table will matter, but they will also pay attention to the game. Is Alabama's defense any better with or without Nick Saban? It's one piece of the puzzle, but will certainly be considered.
Quickly, for both of you guys, Paul, what should they take into account with Saban not there?
Well, I think it will be a factor, but here's the thing to keep in mind, Greeny. If Alabama loses this game and then wins out, let's say they meet Georgia again in the SEC title game, then I think Saban's absence will be moot. Alabama will still be in the playoffs. So as important as this game is, it's not the last game of the season or next to the last game where it could really impact. I think there's just way too much time and unpredictability for this one event to have a significant impact on the College Football Playoff.
But another, like David, which is a bigger deal? Super quickly, not having your coach or not having your quarterback, for say, which would be more considerable if you are someone making that kind of decision?
Well, I'd rather have not have Nick Saban than not have Trevor Lawrence, if you're going that route. But listen, I want to say every game matters, Greeny, because it's supposed to. This game really with Georgia, as long as it's close, both these teams change. It changed nothing about either one of these teams' seasons. Both of them still very much in the mix, can win in December in the SEC championship game and still go to the playoffs easily.
Okay, guys, outstanding. Thank you. Please stay close by. Any further developments in this, Heather, we'll have them, and I'll come back to you guys as we continue. Meanwhile, the big story from the NFL is the continued waiting game surrounding free agent Le'Veon Bell. The Jets released the 28-year-old running back on Tuesday, ending a 19-month relationship that could best be described as rocky. Frankly, that would be kindly described. Meanwhile, our insider is Adam Schefter, who gets up with us early this morning. Schefty, what is the latest on Le'Veon Bell?
Good morning, Greeny. We are still waiting for Le'Veon Bell to pick a team. I would imagine it'll be done by the end of the week at the latest here. And the Jets still owe him $7 million. So it's really not a case of a team working out a financial deal with Le'Veon Bell. My expectation would be that he's going to sign a one-year veteran minimum deal in the place that he wants to go, the place that he wants to play, because the money that he gets from a team is just going to offset the money the Jets already owe him. Nobody's going to pay him more than $7 million. So really, it's going to be a veteran minimum deal from a team. Now, what he's looking for is a chance to showcase his offensive abilities, to win games, to be in a playoff chase, to have a chance to compete for a Super Bowl. Some of the things that didn't happen the past 2 years in New York with the Jets. But again, I would believe and expect that he'd have something done by the end of this week. And again, you hear the attributes that he's looking for. You can imagine the teams that would qualify. That would be New England. That would be Kansas City. That would be Chicago, maybe. That might be Seattle. Those are the teams to watch.
I will keep a very close eye on how many times you look down at your phone today. Maybe this story comes across while we're on the air. In the meantime, another story for you, Shefty. When the Patriots return to practice today, Cam Newton is expected to rejoin them after being removed from the reserve COVID list. That would put Newton on track to start Sunday against the Broncos in Foxborough. And how important is that? Well, the answer is it's very important. New England's offense 2 weeks ago against Kansas City looked lost without him. The void was particularly in the passing game. Without him there, you see all the numbers falling off. The ineffectiveness in the passing game resulted in just 10 points scored, the fewest in a Patriots game since 2018. So, Shefty, let's come back to you. What are you hearing from New England with Cam getting set to return this weekend?
He's on track to play Sunday against the Denver Broncos. The interesting part about this, Greeny, is if New England and Denver had played Sunday as they were initially scheduled to do, or Monday as they later were scheduled to do, I don't know that Cam would have been able to play. But the pushback of the game allowed Cam extra time, and so the Patriots look like they're going to get back Cam Newton now. There's even a chance they could get it back. Stephon Gilmore, a player who tests positive, has to be on the sideline here under the protocols for about 10 days. Cam Newton's been on the sideline that long. He is on track to play Sunday, Greeny.
All right, outstanding. So, Shefty, we're busy with you this morning. Let me bring some more of the crew in. Who we got this morning getting up with us? Lewis Riddick and Dominique Foxworth are here, and D. Wood will join us shortly as well. But, Lewis, let's start with you. We are in a week now where the Patriots are going to get Cam back, where Buffalo just lost and got handled by Tennessee. All of a sudden, do the Patriots look like the team to beat in their division again to you?
Yeah, I think they always were the team to beat, you know, until proven otherwise. And I think obviously with Cam coming back, you know what he brings to the table that Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham don't. He brings a presence, and he brings a level of diversity to their offense that they just don't have otherwise in terms of a run-pass component. And he was in a tremendous, tremendous groove. He was in a tremendous groove in particular with Julian Edelman. I mean, his yards per completion to Julian Edelman was twice what it was any other skill position player, which just shows you how quickly he has adapted to this offense and how the players have adapted to him. This is a guy who was voted team captain. I mean, obviously, he's a huge component to what they are trying to get done up there. And what they're trying to get done is what they've always done, which is to dominate their division, be a contender as far as being the Super Bowl representative in the AFC. And with him coming back, I think they're back on track to doing that, provided everyone else stays healthy. Now, look, that is not discounting anything that Buffalo is doing, because minus the performance that they just had the other night against the Tennessee Titans, they have looked good. But it is still New England's division. It is still Bill Belichick's division until proven otherwise. So let's just see what happens.
Nick, you came out of the Tuesday night game yesterday telling us you were more impressed, not less, with Josh Allen despite that loss. Who do you like right now in the AFC East, New England or Buffalo?
Oh, it's still New England. As soon as they picked up Cam Newton in the offseason, I picked them to win that division. I still feel the same. Bringing Cam Newton back, like Lewis was saying, it means a lot to that team because he brings a level of confidence to those guys. They play better on defense when he's out there. They play better on offense when he's out there. He's that special a player. And this is one of those situations where you don't need a guy with football experience to analyze what happens. You just turn on the game, even the TV copy, and you see what Jared Stidham looked like out there, and then you look at a game when Cam Newton was out there, and a layman fan can look up and say how important he is to that team. So I still got the New England Patriots, until proven otherwise, as the owners of that division.
Yeah, Cam coming back, and we'll see where it stands. All right, guys, sit tight. Damian Woody will join us. We have tons of NFL to get to with monster games on the schedule this weekend. But speaking of big games, the game of the night last night came from the American League Championship Series, Game 4, Astros and Rays playing it in San Diego. Bottom of one with the Astros season on the line. Jose Altuve, bang! He has not struggled at the plate in this postseason. It's been the field where he has suffered. But that was his fifth home run of these playoffs. The Astros a 1-0 lead. Third inning, Altuve at the plate again. This time two on and two out. Same score. Oh, and he sends this one the other way. That one is off the wall and right. Martin Maldonado will come around to score. Altuve with the first RBI for the Astros with a runner in scoring position in the whole series, and it's 2-0 Astros. Top of four now. Randy Arozarena, so good through these playoffs. Will that one stay fair? Yes, it will. It's a two-run shot. Arozarena with a bat flip. Brett Phillips having a little fun. Are these Rays having fun? How about the sign? He's raking all night, all day, all year. We're tied at two. Here's your moment. Bottom of five. Still tied. George Springer. Again, season on the line for the Astros. Oh, that's a no-doubter. That is a two-run shot, his 18th career postseason home run, joining Altuve, Mantle, and Reggie Jackson for fifth most all-time. Astros leading at 4-2. Runner on now. Runners at third for the Rays. Down one in the last inning. This is Yoshi Tsutsugo representing the go-ahead run at the plate. But there's your ball game. And not pitcher Jose Altuve in the field because nothing happened there. He fielded his two opportunities cleanly. That's a big part of the story as the Astros win it and keep their season alive. 4-3 is the final score. And look who's here. Chipper Jones gets up early with us here this morning. And let's start with that. Watching Altuve, such struggles that he has had in the field, and we've seen that historically in baseball. How significant is it to you, not just that he had the big night at the plate, but that he was able to field his position last night?
Well, I didn't really expect anything different. You know, the first couple games, it looked like he was bringing the bounce pass back into vogue, and you just knew at some point that he was going to have an impact positively for his ball club on this series. He's been swinging the bat extremely well, as you saw last night. I don't expect anything different. We've all been there as defenders, you know, in that spot where you're hoping the ball is not hit to you. I think he's in that spot right now, but as long as he's got a bat in his hand, man, he's a dangerous, dangerous player.
Astros alive. I mean, 3-0 is a very deep hole to dig out of. Do you give them a chance to get all the way back out of this thing?
Well, it's not impossible, as the Red Sox showed us, you know, a few years back. But, man, I've been in love with this Rays ball club since before the season. Got a chance to see them in spring training. They're my pick to go all the way just because of their starting pitchers and their depth in their bullpen. They've got four or five guys down there that throw 100 miles an hour from both sides, lefty, righty, doesn't matter. They match up well with anybody. They're as fundamentally sound as anybody. If they get a good starting pitching performance from a Snell or somebody like that going forward, I think it's going to be Katie bar the door for the Astros.
All right, they are one win away from the World Series. Meanwhile, let's go to the National League game last night, and this was the Dodgers with their backs against the wall, down 2-0 against the Braves. And for Atlanta, the starter was Kyle Wright, and for him, everything was wrong. This is the first inning, Dodgers with two runners on and two outs, and Jock Peterson is visiting the seats. That's a three-run shot. That's a 5-0 Dodger lead, and they're just getting started. The very next batter, Edwin Rios. That's a solo shot. Wright would give up 7 earned runs in 2/3 of an inning, and that would be the end of his night. But that would not be the end of the inning. Still top of one. Two outs, Dodgers, bases loaded, up 7-0. Max Muncy at the plate. Ah, you're kidding. Dodgers score 11 runs in the first, most runs any team has ever scored in any inning in baseball's postseason history. And they still weren't done. Top of two now, Cody Bellinger is up at the plate. Now he's just showing off. Bellinger with a shot. Dodgers wind up winning it 15-3. And after the game, Dave Roberts announcing that Clayton Kershaw will start game four for the Dodgers, now down 2-1 in the series. But back to that first inning, the Dodgers 11 runs, the most in any inning in baseball's playoff history. Overall, they sent 14 runners to the plate, scored 10 of their 11 runs with two outs in the inning. And so, Chipper, you know, they always say momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. But when you put a number like that on the board, does it carry over to the next game?
Well, it certainly could. The big question after game two was what the Dodgers did in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings in game two. Would that carry over? So you saw that it did. And obviously that old saying, old baseball adage is true. You know, your only momentum is only as good as the next day's starting pitcher. Dodgers have to feel pretty good sending a Hall of Famer to the mound in game four today against another Braves rookie. You just hope that Bryce Wilson doesn't have the same deer in the headlights kind of look that Kyle Wright had at some point last night.
Well, then let's talk about Kershaw, because you just can't count the number of times that it just winds up coming down to him. And obviously 2-1 isn't a must win, but it's a big game. What do you expect from Kershaw? We all know about his history of struggles in the postseason.
Oh, well, I feel like he's poised for a great start. He's got plenty of rest. If the back is peeled up from the back spasms, I look for him to pitch extremely well. Look, the Braves winning games 1 and 2 allows Freed and Anderson to go game 6 and game 7 on regular rest. The Dodgers don't have that luxury, and with Clayton Kershaw not pitching game 2 and waiting until game 4, he's probably not going to go again in this series. So the Braves are really looking to try and steal one of 3 games, 3, 4, and 5. If they can do that, they got a great chance to win this series. If they don't, it's back in the Dodgers' court.
Well, one good way to keep from doing that is to keep from giving up 11 runs in the first inning. Great to have you back, Chipper Jones. We'll check in with you a little bit later in the show. Just getting started, we are on Get Up this morning. Still to come, Browns, Steelers getting together for the first time since that happened. Don't miss how one Cleveland player is adding fuel to a smoldering fire. And then Lamar and the Ravens, 4-1, a half game back of the Steelers in the AFC North. But all is not well. They're talking about it, and so are we as we get up with you on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. All right, let's have a little fun. 1 year ago yesterday, this legendary moment in football history took place. Adam Schefter with the Lambeau leap. Oh, Schefter! Lewis, can we get a quick evaluation there?
Yeah. Well, Greeny, after you
I don't know if when you do the vertical leap at a combine, you know, they move that thing up and down. Shefty, I don't know if they can lower that thing enough.
I was so petrified of tearing my Achilles when I jumped up there. And then I realized I really didn't jump. I got up about 2 inches and they pulled me up. But the other thing that you see when you look at that is, how much would I give to jump into a pile of fans right now? Like, how great would that be for any of us to jump into
that
fans
now? That is genuinely an outstanding moment. All right, much more to come as we go. As if the Steelers needed any bulletin board material after this, one Browns player may have provided some. You will hear that coming up. And we got a little sneaky Hembo time, and D. Wood is going in the spotlight. Who was the last Browns quarterback to beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh? That's the question. The answer's next. Get Up on ESPN. We've got college football coming your way Saturday on ESPN. 11th-ranked Texas A&M trying to follow up last week's big win over Florida, taking on Mike Leach in Mississippi State. It's Saturday, 4 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. That, of course, is SEC football. And the big story in the SEC yesterday, Alabama head coach Nick Saban, as well as athletic director Greg Byrne, testing positive for the coronavirus. His status for this Saturday's game against Georgia very much in doubt, but he is preparing for the game in any way that he can. We opened with this story this morning, and now we bring in Tom Rinaldi, who is live with us from Tuscaloosa. Tommy, good morning. And you were with Coach Saban just before he heard this news. What more can you tell us about how yesterday went on?
Well, we arrived on campus, Greeny, to do interviews for College Game Day in advance of the matchup against Georgia. The plan was to talk to Coach Saban and then talk to several players as well. We did the interview with Coach Saban, socially distanced and masked. I was about 12 feet away from him. He was masked. The only time he took his mask off was for the duration of that interview. When we were done, he put his mask right back on. I then went back toward his office with him to chat a little bit, spoke with his secretary, Linda. When we then got into the staff room adjacent to his office, again, Greeny, important to note, both of us masked, socially distant from one another. We're having a conversation, and head athletic trainer Jeff Allen opens the door and with a bit of urgency beckons coach that he needs him right away. It's important. I need to see you right away. Coach stands up, leaves the room, and a few moments later, the door opens back up. Coach Saban doesn't come in entirely, looks at me, waves goodbye, and says, sorry, but I have to leave. I have to tend to something, essentially paraphrasing him. And almost immediately, Greeny, he left the building. A short time after that, staff at Alabama told me that he had tested positive. They did that because of what had been my proximity to him. But as the CDC defines it, as we define it, meaning we, our company, well, I was not in close contact with him. No closer really than 10 feet and masked the entire time. But was there when Jeff Allen essentially summoned him to leave the room and to tell him that he had tested positive.
So that's quite the development there. And so now it goes on. What can you tell us about what is happening there? Because you and I were just talking before we came on the air. You made an important point about what they are waiting to hear today.
So, Greeny, it's important here to note that every member of the program now will be tested today. It's also important to note that that's not an aberration. It's not a reaction or a direct response to Nick Saban having tested positive, meaning the SEC protocols mandate that players and staff are tested three times a week. But Alabama has exceeded that going all the way back to September. They have done testing essentially 5 days a week. So every member of the program, players and staff, will be tested today, PCR tests, the more reliable variety. They'll get those results back, presumably later in this day, and we'll begin to see if, in fact, there's a greater spread or anything that could be defined as an outbreak. Of course, if there is, that would call into jeopardy Saturday's game against Georgia. But it starts with everybody being tested today, which is typical protocol for Alabama.
All right, so that's obviously something we'll be watching closely all day, and you'll be there to watch it very quickly. What do you know about the impact that Saban thinks he can have on the game, watching it, in, I guess, from his house on Saturday?
Well, I certainly believe that he's going to do everything he can to prepare. He's going to follow his typical Thursday routine. Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, former head coach, as you know, Greeny, at Washington and USC. He will handle everything within the building, and presumably if Saban's not there, game day. All indications are at this point that he wouldn't be. But he will continue to prepare. In fact, there's a video hookup during practice where he watches and sees everything that happens, and there's a phone there that a staff member has. And if he wants a play repeated, he tells the staff member to repeat that play. He is as involved as he could be without standing there in person.
Again, and all of this in the backdrop is it's 2-3 this week, and so far the biggest game of the year. Rinaldi, outstanding work. Thank you, and we'll keep you in close contact all day long. Glad to see that you are well. Meanwhile, we will move forward here. And let me bring Damian Woody into the conversation for the first time today as we turn our attention to the NFL. Steelers-Browns is a big one this weekend. Good morning, D. Wood, and here's Hembo for you right out of the chute. Who was the last Browns quarterback to beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh?
Boy, I can tell you, this is in recent.
I can hear Hembo from the other corner of the room here suggesting he thinks that D. Wood is doing that on purpose because he doesn't know the answer and he's trying just to keep from getting it wrong. I can tell you that the correct answer is Tim Couch in 2003. The Browns have since lost 16 consecutive games in Pittsburgh. We will try and get Damian Woody. We did not send him to that corner for disciplinary reasons, so he is welcome to be in the rest of the program so long as the signal does allow. In the meantime, we have this game this weekend, and it is Pittsburgh-Cleveland, which is always a big rivalry, but it takes a different tone after this event of last year. It's the first time they've met since this event between Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph, and if you think all the players have put this in the past, think again. Kareem Hunt of the Browns said this to Cleveland.com yesterday, and he said this pretty bluntly, quote, "This one is for Miles, this one's for Cleveland, this one's for a lot of things." So we've spent some time trying to tamp down whether this game had additional meaning based on that, and here's Kareem Hunt saying this one's for Miles. So let me bring the squad back out into this conversation here, and Lewis Riddick, I will start with you. Do you believe that this game has more going on than a normal rivalry division game does based upon what happened last year?
Well, being someone who has played in numerous of those rivalries when I was with the Browns back in the early 90s, I can tell you this. It doesn't need any comments from Kareem Hunt in order for it to be an important football game simply because of the fact that Pittsburgh has dominated Cleveland. They quite honestly have. So, I mean, I think from the Steelers standpoint, they're sitting there going, yeah, okay, that's great. It's for Miles. That's good. You know, and quite honestly, when people make those kind of comments, as far as we're going to win this one for a certain player or something like that. Like, once you get out on the football field, you're not sitting there when it's third and two and you're, you know, down on the goal line trying to punch it in. You're not thinking, man, I'm going to get this in for Miles. I'm going to do this for him right here. I get where he's coming from, but I think what my bigger point, though, is this. This is a big game because it's a rivalry game, because of the history between the two teams. Obviously, there's a lot of emotion that still stems from what happened in the past, but I think from the Browns' standpoint, the best thing they can do is continue to play the type of football that they have been playing. On the defensive side, Myles Garrett needs to continue to do what he's been doing, which is basically play at a defensive MVP type of level. And on the offensive side, what Kareem needs to do is continue to run the rock the way that offense is designed to run through the running game and help Baker out so they can have a chance to get ahead and stop the bleeding that has happened as far as what Pittsburgh does to them in particular when they play in Pittsburgh. All the other stuff, I personally don't get into all that because of the fact that Pittsburgh has owned this series, and I know what it feels like when Pittsburgh owns a series.
Absolutely. Look, it's a big game if for no other reason than one of them is 4-0 and the other is 4-1, and they're in the same division. And, you know, Shefty, I'm curious, in baseball, when there's this kind of thing has happened, you know, both dugouts will be worn before the game, the umpires. Yeah. Is the NFL doing anything like that? Is there any sort of looking ahead to this and letting people know that nothing like that will be tolerated?
Greeny, they warned him last year that that would be the case, that if there were more instances of more aggression and more disturbances like there were last year, that it would lead to more discipline, increased discipline. I don't know whether the league will do it again this week. I don't know whether the league has to do it again this week. It wouldn't surprise me if it did, if it sent a warning through the officials to be on extra alert. But the fact of the matter is, I'd like to think that both sides are mature enough and sophisticated enough to know that if any shenanigans occur the way they did last year, that it would result in extra discipline.
That's a huge game for so many different reasons. That's well put. Meanwhile, staying in that division, you've got the Steelers and you've got the Browns. And then, of course, you have the Ravens, who are the defending division champs and are continuing to win games. But last year, they set the single season rushing record and their quarterback, Lamar Jackson, won the MVP award unanimously. The offense has not come quite as easily so far this year. And Mark Ingram, the running back, was talking about that yesterday.
We know that we haven't played our best as an offense yet. And we're striving for excellence. We're striving for better execution. We're striving for to have a complete 60-minute game. And we're striving to, you know, make sure we have our best football game coming up here on Sunday against the Eagles. We have to get better in order to get to where we want to go, which is to be champions. So, yeah, the 2020 Ravens are still working on our identity, and we're still working to be the best possible versions of ourselves.
I mean, they're winning, and they're playing well, but they don't look exactly the same as they did a year ago, and there's been some conversation that perhaps they're trying to force the passing game a little bit at this point in the season. Am I being told that Adam Schefter has breaking news? Okay, never mind. So we will get back to the Ravens conversation in a moment, but Schefter, I'm told you have news. The floor is yours.
Greeny, this is a story that we've heard before, and it's a story we'll hear again, but the Atlanta Falcons are shutting down their training facility this morning after multiple positive tests. I believe it's at least four positive tests this morning in the Falcons complex. They are shutting down here. They have an upcoming game against the Minnesota Vikings, and so now all the scenarios that we've been through here in recent weeks with the Steelers and the Titans, with the Bills and the Chiefs, with the Patriots and the Broncos, with all those other scenarios now come into play between the Atlanta Falcons and the Minnesota Vikings. Again, I was told it was four positive tests this morning. I got confirmation that there are multiple positive tests, so the Atlanta Falcons now have to shut down. And I think what the league has always looked out for and watched out for is the fact that they could make do with one positive test. The Falcons had the first player this season, A.J. Terrell, the cornerback, go on the list in season, and he didn't play in that game about 2-3 weeks ago. He was back after 2 weeks, but now there are four more positive tests. So that would be five positive tests at a minimum in the last 2 weeks out of Atlanta, and that obviously raises questions as to whether the Falcons will be able to play their game on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. Keep in mind, of course, that there's already been one game this week moved to Monday night. We have no Thursday night football this week. On Monday night, we're supposed to get the Cowboys and the Cardinals. And right before that, we're supposed to get the Bills and the Chiefs. And the league has used Monday and Tuesday as an area to push back games if extra time were needed. Well, now we've got multiple tests in Atlanta. We'll see how the league decides to handle this particular situation, because every situation, while they have similarities, there are differences. But there are multiple positive tests out of Atlanta this morning, and I think it's fair to say that the game between the Vikings and Falcons then would be in jeopardy.
Okay, so it's Adam Schefter again with the breaking news. Falcons have positive tests in their facility. Again, they are, none of this matters, but they're 0-5. They fired their coach this past weekend. They fired the general manager this past weekend, and now their game this weekend is very much in doubt. Dominique Foxworth, let me just quickly come to you. Your thoughts here as, again, the National Football League continues to deal with these situations.
Yeah, it's not going to stop. We don't have a bubble for the NFL. It was unrealistic to expect that. So I think this whole season, the more these type of things happen, I think we start to get more comfortable with the idea that this season, like every season, frankly, is unfair. But this is going to be unfair in a different way. So it's really unfortunate for the Falcons and unfortunate for the Vikings. I always feel bad for the guys. I think sometimes we forget how serious this disease is. So while we just talk about how it's pushing games and hope these guys will be back, we need to understand also that there are potential long-term consequences for this, and we should hope that these guys can come back and do well. But I also feel terribly for the team who doesn't have any positive tests, having their schedule impacted. This time it's the Vikings. I believe that happened to them once already this season. So it's tough for them to keep turning on and off as far as practice and bye week is concerned, when you have so much to prepare for and so much riding on the season.
Yeah, just this past week, we saw the National Football League move multiple games around that are coming up in the future, and I would anticipate we'll continue to see that. These are just the realities of pro football in 2020. Again, Schefter reporting live here on Get Up just moments ago. The Atlanta Falcons have shut down their facility. They have multiple positive tests. You see my crew that is here. We'll continue in just a moment with much more on this and plenty more from the NFL on the way. You'll never see a more memorable play that didn't count. You don't want to miss D. Wood's take as he throws Josh Norman on the wood pile this week. That's on the way. Get up on ESPN.
It's science. But the gloves are more than a means for softening the blows. They stand for sacrifice. For rising above station. For standing one's ground. And standing alone.
It's one of the biggest fights of the year, and it's Saturday night on ESPN. Top pound for pound boxer in the world is Vasily Lomachenko. He takes on the unbeaten Teofimo Lopez for the unified lightweight title. Coverage starts Saturday night, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. We've been doing all of these puns around the name of Damian Woody.
Knock on wood.
Taking him to the woodshed.
Before that, it was wood do.
And this week, it's going to be called firewood.
Every week, we got a new wood-based pun to build a segment around.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
So every week we create... every week... this week,
okay.
This week it is the wood pile, and the question, D Wood, is who are you piling on this week?
Well, Greeny, you know, we had the pleasure of enjoying Tuesday night football, and I was watching a game, and you know, I noticed a certain player named Josh Norman in the game, and I'm sitting there enjoying adult beverage, and I'm noticing Derrick Henry literally tossing his behind out of the club. Greeny, look at this. This man looked like he was doing martial arts. He stiff-armed him so bad, he looked like he was doing a martial arts kick horizontally to the ground. How is this possible where two grown men playing in the National Football League gets tossed like that in a football game? That should never, ever happen. I don't know why Josh Norman tried to tackle him up high. I mean, Derrick Henry is about as tall as me and weighs about 250 pounds. So that's what Josh Norman gets for trying to tackle a grown man that high up on his shoulder pads. Look at this, Greeny. This man has a family. This man has kids. And now he has to live with that for the rest of his life. Because guess what? This will get played over and over again. And guess what? I will be here talking about this play over and over again. So I love it. Himbo, I got to thank Himbo for bringing it to my attention because, boy, I can't get enough of this play, Greeny. I can't get enough of it, man.
Well, you are piling on. There's no question of that. Now, Lewis, Dominique, and you can see it from his face, he refused to even engage in this yesterday because it was so painful to him as a former defensive back. You too, Lewis, are a former defensive back. Did anything like that ever happen to you?
No.
Lou, don't make this go into the archives now.
Hey, go ahead.
To the archives, Lou.
Please, go ahead. I have not like that.
Man,
not
Lou, like that. Lou was playing safety with a neck roll. I guarantee you he never got hit like that. He was coming downhill 90 degrees, smacking fools. I see Lou.
No doubt. Look, I'll tell you this. I wouldn't have tackled him high, that's for sure. And I can just tell you this. I thought when I saw that play, I thought back to my days in Atlanta. Deion Sanders used to give out an award. He used to get out an award every week where someone used to have to wear a long shirt underneath their shirt that used to just say, I forget what he used to put. He called it the homie of the week. Whenever you went to tackle somebody and got trucked, what I was thinking about is in the middle of that play, as soon as that play was over, I would have walked right up to Josh and said, you know what shirt you about to wear this week, don't you? I would have told him that going back to the huddle.
Hey,
Greeny, I will say that I've been put in that position before, too, on an interception. London Fletcher hit me on an interception. And everybody on the set knows when an interception happens, you get the whole keep your head on a swivel. Well, I didn't keep my head on a swivel. And I literally look like Josh Norman on that interception return against Buffalo.
Okay,
that
I need
happened.
You to We need the date on that. You're going to have to give that to Hembo in the break because we need to show that if we possibly can in the next hour. In the meantime, we need to get to probably the best game of the weekend, and that is the Battle of the Bays and the Battle of these Legends, the third ever meeting between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. The first came in 2014 at Lambeau. Rodgers won the night, 368 yards, two touchdowns. Brady, down five with 3 minutes to go, just 20 yards away from the end zone, took a huge sack, and the Packers won. The rematch came in Foxborough in 2018. Back and forth, the game went for three quarters. Patriots scored 14 unanswered in the final quarter, including a 55-yard touchdown pass from Brady. So they're 1-1 against each other, and now they meet in Tampa with everything on the line. According to our analytics, the Packers have a 47% chance to make the NFC Championship. The Buccaneers' chance is 24% as these two legends go head-to-head. And so let's talk about this game, which obviously has an enormous amount at stake. Lewis, let me put the question to you this way. Rodgers and Brady are one thing. Which do you have more confidence in the supporting cast? Do you have more confidence in what Brady has around him or in what Rodgers has around him Sunday and going through the rest of this year?
Yeah, I'm going to go against conventional wisdom and say I'm more confident in what the Packers have around Aaron Rodgers right now because he has a tremendous rapport with everyone up there, starting with Davante Adams, provided that everyone there is healthy coming off of this bye. Davante Adams right now, Alan Lazard, I mean, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, these guys are looking tremendous. They have two of the best running backs in the NFL in Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. And Aaron just is in a place from a mental standpoint and a physical standpoint to where they're hitting on all cylinders. I think the Packers could absolutely do a lot of damage as we move here into the latter part of the season.
You just had them on Monday night recently, so obviously you're very attuned to the chemistry there. Dominique, how about the edge between the quarterbacks this Sunday? Rodgers or Brady, who do you have more confidence in playing huge in this matchup?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely Aaron Rodgers. You and I have been critical of the way Aaron Rodgers played in the last couple of seasons, but this year there is nothing to criticize. He is almost perfect so far this season. If it wasn't for the fact that we feel bad for Russell Wilson never having won an MVP, I think a lot more people would accept the fact that Aaron Rodgers is playing MVP level football right now this season and carrying this team. You take him off that team, they're nowhere close to what they are.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers actually has the highest QBR through four games in the history of that metric. We will pause on that thought. We will continue looking for the Damian Woody video. And then we will talk about this. After a wild week in the NFL, where does Cam's return put the Patriots in the pecking order of the NFL? That answer and more as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.